Hello?
Hello, Sid. I mean, Cindy.
I think you have the wrong number.
Do I?
It happens. Take it easy.
Why do you want to talk to me?
Who is this?
You tell me your name, I'll tell you mine.
I don't think so.
What's that noise?
I'm getting ready to listen to a podcast.
Really? What?
Oh, just some film podcast.
You like film podcasts?
Uh-huh.
What's your favorite film podcast?
I don't know.
You have to have a favorite. What comes to mind?
The Rewatchables. The one where what's his name talks about films he can't stop watching?
Yeah.
What's yours?
The one that you're about to listen on your computer right now. What?
I gotta go.
Don't hang up on me.
Yes?
I told you not to hang up on me.
What do you want?
To talk about podcast.
Well, dial someone else, okay? Listen, asshole!
No, you listen, you little bitch! You hang up on me again, I've got you like a fish, understand? Yeah.
Is this a joke?
I wanna play a game.
What kind of a game?
You'll see what kind of game. Here's how we play. I ask a question. If you get it right, you live.
No.
Come on, it'll be fun.
Please.
It's an easy category. Podcast trivia. I will even give you a warm-up question.
Don't do this.
Name the host of the Rewatchables. Come on, it's your favorite podcast, remember?
No.
Come on, yes, you do.
No.
What's his name? Your life's counting on you.
Bill Simmons.
Yes! Very good. Now for the real question.
No! No!
But you're doing so well. We can't stop now.
Stop! Leave me alone.
Then answer the question. Same category.
Please stop.
What was the first episode of the movie Loot?
The first Loot! The first Loot!
I'm sorry. That's the wrong answer.
No, it's not! No, it's not!
Afraid not.
Listen, it was the first Loot. I've listened to that podcast 20 goddamn times.
Then you should know the first Loot was the first guest episode. Carlo was podcasting solo for a whole year before that, and his first episode was one where he rambled on about 15 films in 20 minutes. I'm afraid that was a wrong answer. Lucky for you, there's a bonus round. Hey, we're not finished yet. Final question. Are you ready?
Leave me alone.
Answer the question and I will. What podcasting platform is the Movie Loot at?
What?
There are two main podcasting platforms, Spotify and Apple Podcasts, as well as other minor ones. Where is the Movie Loot playing now? If you answer correctly, you may live and listen to it.
Don't do this.
Your call, here it is.
You got 5 seconds to tell me where you buried the loot. Where's the loot?
I don't know who's got the loot. I don't know if anybody's got the loot.
I'm setting up a guy who's incredibly important to us who's going to tell me where the loot is.
Where's the loot?
Hello, looters! Welcome to the Movie Loot, the podcast where we share the best, greatest, most entertaining, and/or weirdest film loot you could find. My name is Carlo, and we'll be sharing the loot today. This is episode 77, the opening loot, and it's the episode with which I want to officially open this new year of the Movie Loot, where we will talk about opening scenes. But before we get into the topic of the day, let's talk a bit about our past episodes and some promos. A couple of weeks ago, we kickstarted the year with a special episode called The January Assignment, which was a prologue to one of the changes we're making in the podcast this year. In it, me and my friend Corey from the Film Effect podcast settled on 5 categories of films to watch during January. We broadcast that live and it was brief but a lot of fun. We finished with the following categories to watch. A Friday the 13th film, the first Best Picture winner we haven't seen, the first film from any director we like, a film from the new Sight and Sound Best Picture list, whose ranking includes the number one, and a film from Sudan. So that's our loot for the month. So get ready for the January loot episode in the next few weeks, where me and Corey will meet again to talk about the films that we watched for that loot. What we'll do with that loot may be tied to our next change, so let's segue into that. Because another important change for the Movie Loot is that we launch our Patreon, which you can find at patreon.com/movieloot. You can check it out and see what we're offering to those that support us. We have three tiers available. The first one we've dubbed the Pickpocket, for those that are always on the move, quick, looking for small, valuable loots. And those that subscribe to this tier for just $3 a month will get access to exclusive bonus content that we will share in our Patreon. You'll be part of our inner circle of looters, a chat where we will talk and discuss about different film topics, a Patreon shout-out every episode, a personalized birthday loot message, and a vote in our new monthly loot challenge. This means that at the end of every month, when me and my guests present our loot of films, which I was talking about before, we will put both loots to a vote for our Patreon supporters to choose who brought the best loot of films. The second tier we've dubbed the Bank Robber, for those that take a bit more time with their loot and want a bit more for their effort. Which means that for $8 a month, you'll get everything from the first tier, exclusive content, private chat, patron shoutout, personalized birthday loot, the boat in the monthly loot challenge, but also access to quick early reactions of the films I see. So every week or so, I will record brief reactions to films I see, and I will put them up in the Patreon for you to share your thoughts and comment on. Finally, the Bank Robbers will also get a small gift from the Movie Loot. The third tier, which we've dubbed the Mastermind, for those exceptional thieves that are interested in all the benefits of the Movie Loot, you'll get everything from the previous tiers, shout out both, birthday message, early quick reactions, plus your chance to make your own loot. So what that means is that you can choose a topic, whatever you want. It can be a filmmaker, a genre, a decade, anything. And we will record a special Patreon loot episode where you and me can talk about that topic, choose our favorite films from that topic, and so on. This Mastermind tier is available just for $15 a month. The main goal here is to get more interaction with my looters and obviously to help us keep the show going, pay the hosting fees, maybe buy better equipment. So go to patreon.com/movieloot and grab it now. Last but not least, I just want to give a couple of shout-outs to some people that are always supporting us. My friend Tom at Death Heaven, probably my most loyal listener, he recently tweeted a self-made video with most of my 5-star films on Letterboxd, and it was fun and humbling at the same time that he took the time to do that, so thanks Tom. I want to give another shout-out to another one of my most loyal listeners and past guests, Sylvie at Sly_Wit, who is always supporting us. She also praised my intro to my latest special episode on Good Will Hunting, saying it was the best intro ever. Well, wait till you listen to this one. Also, another great friend and past guest, Keram at K. Maliki Sanchez, who's always supporting us, giving recommendations, and just there to talk out films. I want to give a special shout out to Ian from Best Film Ever Podcast for being there, for advice and guidance. You know it, man. And if you like the Movie Loot, you'll definitely like Best Film Ever, so check them out. Some other shout outs to people that always support us, share their thoughts on our episodes, and always put us up. Brian Scottle from Sonic Cinema, Andres from The Latin Jukebox, Josh from Your Next Favorite Movie, Kevin from the podcast I Wouldn't Die, the guys at Sci-Fi Remnant, Chad Clinton Freeman at Polystaffel, and so many others. Thanks to everybody for the support. We're grateful and we hope that you keep listening. So it's time to open the door to our new year and talk about opening scenes. And for that, I'm joined by Pete from the Middle Class Film Class podcast. Let's go.
The opening loot.
Hello, looters. Welcome to the Movie Loot. This is our first official episode of 2023. And what best way to open our year than with an episode dedicated to opening scenes. And for that, we are joined by the man, the legend, the real Pete from Middle Class Film Class podcast. How are you doing, Pete?
I'm doing great. I love that intro. Thanks, buddy.
Those are the E's in your Twitter handle.
Pete, the fourth power.
I'm glad to have you here, Pete. Pete is one of those people I frequently interact with on Twitter. And like I told you, when we settled this, I had your name already on a short list of people that I wanted to bring to the loot at some point. And I already had this topic in mind for January. I wanted to open with opening scenes. Spoiler, I might close the year with closing scenes. So get ready for that for the end of the year. And then we had a couple of exchanges on Twitter. I think it was even the same week where the topic of opening scenes came up. So I thought, yeah, that's it. serendipity.
Yeah,
so I had to reach out to you. Before we dive into the topic, before we open the door for opening scenes, let's talk about you and middle class film class. What's up with it? How did that start?
Yeah, it's funny because me and Joseph and Tyler were the three hosts, and the show is Tyler's brainchild. We were friends in real life. Tyler actually used to work for me. I run a body shop, and he was working for me for a couple years, and then he moved to a different location within the same company. And after he was not my employee anymore, we started hanging out outside of work. And Joseph and I, my girlfriend, who I love dearly, and his wife are very close friends. So we became friends through that, and Tyler's now our friend as well. And we used to watch movies and talk about movies at length, just for no reason, just for fun. And he kept talking about, oh, we should do a show. And I'm like, yeah, no. How do you do a podcast anyways? And he said, my mom's got a podcast. How hard could it be? So so sure enough, we got it together, and we had a few I had some things that I really needed to have happen on the show. I wanted to do something with really good, you know, quality in general and a regular schedule. I didn't want to just throw it up at whenever time. And those were things that were important for me because that's what I look for in a podcast. I got my shows that release on Mondays. I got my shows release on Fridays that I listen to every week. And it's like this regular comfort thing for me. So I wanted to do that. And I've been listening to podcasts since, gosh, when Bill Burr started his podcast in what it was, 06 or 07 or something like that.
Yeah,
way back in the day. And when I was painting cars for a living, I would have like 6-8 hours worth of headphone time a day. And I would just churn through these podcasts. And, you know, now I'm kind of emulating myself after a lot of the ones that I really took heart to. So our show is recorded like a live radio show, almost like a morning show. So we have music that's put in live. We don't do a pre-recorded intro or pre-recorded outro, although we've talked about it. We feel like it's every episode's, you know, its own unique thing. And we put sound effects in live, set segment audio live. I love having fun with it where we'll take the same segment that we have and recreate the sound bumper, intro and outro music, you know, every 6 months or 9 months or so. And it's really the best thing about it that I've come to find is the people that I've met through the community, the movie podcast listener and creator community. So people like you, people like Heather Sachs and David Rosen and Jason from Binge Movies and, you know, D.W. Lumber, you know, all these guys and girls that are interesting movie people, and you get these cool takes. And then we have a kind of a we call it like a sister show or a cousin show that's a Cinematics, and it's Greg, Bruce and Eric that I've been on their discussion board on Facebook, the Cinematics Facebook page, for years. And I've followed Greg and Anderson of Cinematics for years. And now I've kind of like contributed audio to their show. They've come on our show, done trivia on our show. We got kind of go back and forth with each other. And there was this great community there within like this podcast film community. And it's been a lot of fun. We've been doing it for almost three and a half years now. And we release every Monday and every Wednesday. So there's a lot of fresh content, and we interact with our listeners a lot.
Yeah, that's one of the things, and I actually had it written in my notes, that I really enjoy the live-like format, that live recording format that you apply. I don't know if I could do it, and I get very, very anal with the editing, but I really enjoy it, and you three have a really great chemistry, and it really flows very, very smooth, very fun, and it's very enjoyable.
Well, thank you. And I will say this, I have different shows that I listen to for different reasons. You know, I have, you know, Piecing Together has a really interesting the idea of it, you know,
yeah,
how to breaking apart a new release to find out what influenced it. It's such a cool thing, but that I didn't even realize I was doing watching movies. And now as I'm watching new movies, I'm like, oh, that's a puzzle piece. I gotta write David. and there's movies that, you know, there's shows like the aforementioned Cinematics where they'll talk about movies that haven't even come out yet because they get a lot of pre-release screeners. And then, you know, Binge Movies is like this huge long ranking epic, you know, season by season thing that you can either just passively be a part of or actively be a part of. So I feel like every show has a different kind of like speed and style and brings something different to the table. I don't know if there's a whole lot of shows that are like movie centric that do the kind of like morning show format live. I know a lot of, you know, shows will do like zero editing. I'm too lazy to edit all the ums and ahs out, you know. it's too much, and we produce too much to be able to really effectively do that and still have a life. So
yeah,
I think each episode we do is at least an hour long, sometimes up to an hour and a half. There's two a week, so we just put it in, maybe correct some coughs and some levels. If the doorbell rings and the dogs go crazy, I'll cut that out.
but definitely, it's editing is a labor of love.
It is. Yeah. Bless you for that.
I always say it's a love and hate relationship. But definitely, definitely love the form. I love the show. I was listening to, which was the one that I was listening to?
Coherence?
Yeah, Coherence. Yeah, and I really had a lot of fun, especially because I really enjoyed the film. And like you said in the episode, it's a film that not a lot of people talk about. It has actually like gained some traction recently on Twitter. A lot of people are talking about it. So I really enjoy your take and how you dived into the theme. I joke with you on Twitter because I said you said there were no themes and then you dive into the themes.
Yeah, it has no themes. Well, here's five of them.
But I really enjoyed that discussion because it's a fun chemistry, but you three show that you know what you're talking about, and you show that you can dive into a film with fun takes, but also with insightful takes, and like you were teaching a class, like a middle class.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. Joseph actually went to film school, and he's the resident technical person on our crew. I just watch more movies than I probably should, and I've been doing that for most of my life. More so since the pandemic started. And then Tyler, it watches the kind of stuff that I'm not really into, you know, older like 80s slashers and stuff like that, and kind of like grunge core stuff. And that's his speed. We all have a different take on things. And Tyler likes to say that he represents the everyman and doesn't know much about movies. So it works out. And that Coherence episode was actually a fan pick. So we do review fan movies and we have our own movies, and we just kind of revamped some stuff for Patreon that we just started a Patreon like a month ago at the beginning of the year. And it's been pretty fun so far making bonus content for that too.
Yeah, I agree. I actually started a Patreon like a couple of weeks ago. So
nice.
Let's hope that everything works out well for both of us.
Yeah.
And let's keep hoping for more great content from Middle Class Film Class. To everybody out there, make sure you check them out. They're a great show, like we've been mentioning here. And make sure you open the door for them at some point.
Thanks, buddy. I appreciate that.
And your Twitter bio says, ask me about my old car. So I will ask you, what about the old cars?
So I am a car guy. I kind of categorize movies into good car movies or bad car movies. And there's twofold for that. You know, is it realistic? Is the car shifting into reverse and driving backwards at 80 miles an hour, which is impossible, by the way. There's only one speed in the gearbox that goes in reverse. You can't do that. It's like driving 80 miles an hour in first gear. You can't do it. You know, are they making burnout sounds like they're on the asphalt, but they're really in gravel? Done. Don't like it. There's that. But there's also, those are the things that get stuck in my craw. I hate it. But then there's like stuff like Ford versus Ferrari, beautiful car movie. I'm not much of a race car guy, but there's some period like early 60s, maybe like late 50s stuff in there that's really some gorgeous cars when like American cars were beautiful. And I have a few old cars. I got a 61 Cadillac Sedan DeVille, a 61 Buick Electra, and a 54 Cadillac. All four doors, all long, long submarine land yacht cars that don't go fast. They just look good going down the road, and they get, you know, one there in one piece. So those are my babies. When I show people my baby pictures, they're my cars.
No, I heard you mention it. I didn't even know that you were a car guy around the body shop. And I think you posted some pictures a while ago of some car or something. And I said, oh, that car looks fine. And I think you have right now your Twitter picture.
Yeah, the banner is my three old ladies. And I'm just like editing. I have a love-hate relationship with them because here in California, where I'm in Northern California, just south of Sacramento, and California has the most strict emissions laws. So you have to smog your car. You have to get a smog check every 2 years after the car is more than, you know, 5-10 years old or something, unless it's older than 1975. Then it's all bets are off. So I don't have to smog those cars. I can do whatever I want to them. They can run as crappy as you imagine, blowing black smoke into the atmosphere. They don't. Thank you. But that just means that back in those days, things tend to be not as reliable back then. So, you know, there's a fair amount of cursing at, you know, God, why won't you start? God dang it. You know, and also my neighbors hate me. So because I got all three old cars parked in front of my house.
No, but maybe you can find an opening for them somewhere in your house that maybe you can get them in.
I'll put them on the lawn. That way the neighbors will really love me.
There you go. There's a nice opening. Like an opening.
Yeah. Oh, opening. I gotcha. I see where you're going.
I'm looking for a segue.
Yeah, man, that's professional. I've stepped right on it. My bad.
No, that's okay. But let's segue into our topic about opening scenes. And I wanted to start the year talking about great opening scenes in movies. And why? Because I believe that an opening scene is a very important part of a film. I don't know what you think about it, if you agree with me or not. But I read something that it's called serial position effect, which is it kind of says that people remember what comes first and what comes last in a movie or in a book, and not what occurs in the middle. So that opening scene, that first interaction we have with the film, is actually really important. What do you think?
Yeah, I don't think it's absolutely 100% necessary for every movie, but getting a great attention, like a really awesome attention getting scene, is really important for, I feel like now more than ever, everything's vying for our attention. You know, people have shorter attention spans, you know, you're expected to be able to text your friends and your loved ones back within, you know, 5 minutes or whatever. It's like the attention spans are so short, you know, TikTok and Snapchat and stuff. It's like shorter the better. If it's past 3 minutes long, I don't want to watch it. So if you can't get my attention within the first 3 minutes as a viewer, you risk me turning the movie off. I'm not me personally, but there's a lot of people that are like, I was 10 minutes in and didn't catch me. It's gone. So I think that you get, as a filmmaker, you are really kind of hedging your bets and making a good bet if you have a really tight opening. And the other thing too, which I think about, makes you more invested in the rest of the movie, is that if in that opening scene, you can also like feel the emotions and learn a lot about the character through what they just experienced and how they reacted to those experiences. So you might be thinking, I would not be acting like that person right now. I would be out the door. You get to know something about that person and how antithetical they are to you, or how similar they are to you. So I think it is really important, although it's not really necessary 100%, but it's important if you want to get that, you know.
I think that the opening of any, let's say, event or artistic expression is important. Like we're just saying, it's important in setting a proper foundation of what's to come. For example, the first song in a live concert, you have to start with a bang in a live concert.
Definitely.
Or for those that already have to rub some ointment on their knees, the first song of an album. Now you don't get that because we all download music or listen to whatever comes in Spotify or whatever. But for those that grew up listening to LPs or cassettes or CDs, you could see there was like special care taken in choosing what's going to be the first song, what's going to be the second song, what's going to be the third song. The opening number of a musical, just like does the opening scene of a film, I think helps to establish the tone and the themes that will certainly permeate the whole film. It doesn't have to be like a bombastic boom. This is going to be like a shootout or something clever or something witty, but whatever you do, that opening scene helps to establish that mood. So I really think it's really important.
Yeah, and I think that you're going to see just how basic my film tastes are when you see my list, because a lot of it is like, wow, that was something. And you're right in the sense that, you know, if you're going to a rock concert, that first song, that better be good. It better blow you away.
Yeah.
Maybe if it's a classical concert or a jazz concert, maybe it doesn't have to be in your face. Maybe they don't want that. So there is a lot of movies out there where the opening scenes are impactful and set the stage for the rest of the movie, but they just don't resonate with me. They're not going to make my top five. The ones that are going to be on my list are things that I will never forget, those scenes. And on the same time, when I rewatch a movie, I don't always get through it. You know, if I'm watching a movie for the first time, I'll watch it start to finish. But if I'm going to rewatch, say, Whiplash, I may not finish the entire movie, but I'll get 45 minutes in and I got to go do something. And I'm like, so I've seen the first 45 minutes, or let's just say, for example, Full Metal Jacket. I've seen the first 45 minutes of that movie probably 40 times. First 15 minutes of Glengarry Glen Ross, 25 times. I've only seen the movie through 3-4 times. So if the beginning is even better, then it's better for me as a viewer too.
Yeah, I agree. I like to rewatch movies a lot, and the rewatch value for me is very, very important to classify a film as part of my favorites. Maybe I should rewatch more, because more often than not, I'm caught up on my challenges and what I need to watch, so I don't get enough time to rewatch. But yeah, and I often do what you say. I often go, let me go to YouTube and watch this opening scene or this whatever scene. It doesn't have to be an opening scene, because I like to experience it. And one of the things that you mentioned our short attention span, and I think that's something that has increased as time goes on, and social media, like you mentioned, you were mentioning it, and it had it in my mind. If I open a YouTube video and it's like 10 minutes long, I'm not going to watch it.
Yeah.
we are guilty of that ourselves. So we have that issue. And I was thinking about more recent films, and I'm going to give an example that may or may not be on my list. For example, Scream. Scream has one of the most iconic openings on horror films. And it's great, but it hits you and it puts you on edge of what's to come. But then I was remembering that a while ago, I was rewatching two of my favorite horror films, Alien and The Exorcist. And both films don't have such an opening. They start with a very subdued and quiet way. They do establish the atmosphere. They do set the mood of what's to come. But there's no bombastic opening.
Those are two great references for subtle openings that really do match the tone of the movie.
Yeah, those are two films that they don't really get things going until like 30, 40 minutes in. I mean, I think the breakfast scene in Alien is like 40 minutes in. And that's when more or less things kick off. And The Exorcist, I think that the really intense things with the girls start happening like 40, 50 minutes in, I think. So it's really interesting to see that shift to a more, now you see every horror film has to start with a bang. Every action film has to start with a bang for the reasons that you mentioned.
It's weird because some of the greats, you know, and that's kind of why I say it's not 100% necessary, but just as much care is taken on the greatest, some of the greatest movies of all time, when I would consider The Exorcist and Alien as in that category, but say something like Silence of the Lambs, not a arresting intro, you know, it's Clarice running at the training academy. And the important part about that movie is not, you know, to grab you from the beginning. It's to set this kind of mysterious tone throughout and building, you know.
Yeah, because we're talking about opening scenes, and maybe that we are preconceived to think about opening scenes like big bombastic opening scenes that make you like go wow, and I wasn't expecting that. But the opening scene of Silence of the Lambs is actually an excellent one in establishing what I was mentioning a while ago, like setting the themes and setting the mood. Because, for example, this is right out of the blue because I didn't know you were going to bring it and I hadn't thought about it, but I'm a huge fan of Silence of the Lambs. It's easily top 10, top 5 on my list. Nice. But that opening with Clarice running establishes like a danger that she's seen. I mean, she's just practicing the FBI, but we don't know that. And it kind of sets her in the victim angle of the viewer. And then you have, oh, the boss is calling for you. And then you have that iconic elevator scene where she steps into the elevator. And just that scene where you see her alone in the elevator, she's wearing her gray sweatpants and sweatshirts, and she's surrounded by all these tall men with red polo shirts.
Yeah.
That establishes that theme of masculinity and her role, how little, quote-unquote, little she is in the Bureau. And it establishes pretty much what you're going to see all through the film. A lesser film would have done that with a clumsy exposition. Like maybe you would have Scott Glenn talking with some other guy. She's the only woman here. Yeah. Or something like that.
Oh, my God. What a different movie that would be.
How are you going to give her that case? This is an important case. No, but she scored.
Hannibal Lecter, are you kidding me? He's one of the most crazy psychopaths we have locked away. He's been in the way for eating three people's brains. Don't you remember that? Yeah.
But Jonathan Demme does all that with no dialogue. I mean, he does that just with visuals. And it's I think it's a perfect example of a more nuanced opening scene. And maybe that's not what I'm going for with my five picks. Maybe I'm going for the more boom, more clever, surprising, or whatever.
I'm curious if we're going to have how much overlap we're going to have. I feel like we're going to have at least a little, but you you have such a broad movie taste, and I admittedly do not lean hard on the classics. You know, pre-1980 is a really big blind spot for me. That's a big blind spot. we'll see.
But we'll see. Yeah, we'll see. There are also certain franchises that have made their opening scenes like some sort of staple. For example, we mentioned Scream, and Scream has made some sort of staple to always open with a big, scary scene where someone, let's say a big star, is killed.
Yeah.
And nobody was expecting Drew Barrymore to die in that opening scene. I mean, she was like the star. She was, oh, Drew Barrymore's in this film. She's she's in the cover art. And
yeah,
that was really clever. I saw it in theaters like 3 times, and it really got me.
Nice.
Mission Impossible is another one that with this new
era of Tom Cruise making all his Mission Impossible. He always starts with a big action scene. James Bond has done that for years and years. When you go watch one of these films from these franchises, do you go in already expecting that wow factor in those first 10, 20 minutes? If it doesn't fill your expectations, do you feel like, oh, disappointed, let down?
A little bit. I think for me, the Bond thing is the opening song, not so much as, you know, the gag before it, you know, the event or whatever it is. I can always kind of expect there's going to be some pretty cool action-y sort of stuff with Bond. And I'm not the biggest Bond fan. I think Daniel Craig is so fantastic as James Bond. So really curious to see where they go next. But the one that really sticks out to me, and I do like those recurring things, because when you watch it, not only do you have something to rate on the movie as a whole, but now I can compare all the intros to the other intros of the series. So I like the reward of having an entire franchise that you've watched, and now you can look at it and objectively compare them against each other. Well, this is the best version of Jason, and this is the best kill of the entire franchise, and this was the best kill of the movie, and this is the worst final girl. You know, I like that sort of thing. But I like, so for me, my favorite of all that recurring opening bit in the franchise is Austin Powers. I love it. I love the dance sequence. I love the corny cheesiness of whatever goofy thing they're making fun of. And then it goes into this Bossa Casanova or something like that. The song.
Bossa Nova.
Yeah. And they do the dance, and they got the flutes playing, and everyone's dancing. And it's like, it's pure joy. It's stupidness. That sets the tone for the entire Austin Powers movie. You get camp, cheesiness, puns, comedy, you know, goofy throwback to, you know, In Like Flint type era sort of stuff. And you know exactly when you're going to get for the rest of the movie. And then I can compare the first one is the best and the third one was better than the second one and blah, 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 blah. So I love the Austin Powers opening for me personally.
Yeah, I love them too, but I'm going to show my age of it. But you went for Austin Powers, and when you mentioned it, I was remembering the Naked Gun, the first one. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've seen it. But
yeah, love series.
And I was remembering how hard I laughed when I saw it for the first time, when you get Frank Drebin fighting like Gorbachev and Gaddafi and Ayatollah, something that you probably couldn't do now. But it was hilarious.
It's so funny. I mean, yeah. Leslie Nielsen is a damn national treasure. He's so great. And that entire series, the subtlety of the gags was amazing.
Definitely. And going back to the James Bond, I remember, because it has more or less been, like I said, like a staple of the franchise, always to have that big action opening. And I remember that I wasn't that familiar with the early ones when I was a teenager. I remember I saw some of the Roger Moore ones when I was growing up, but I really don't remember them at all. And then when Pierce Brosnan started in GoldenEye, that was kind of like my first official Bond. And when I saw GoldenEye, I remember that the opening scene. I don't know if you remember the opening scene when he flies the plane. The plane drops from the cliff and he like jumps down the cliff and gets inside the plane so that he can steer it in time. I remember that after it, and I had to pause it and go down. Yeah.
Oh yeah, sure.
Fuck off.
I like that, and then the one where he does the bungee jump to the bottom of the thing. And I don't know, I can't remember if that's the opening of that movie, because all those movies would kind of blur together for me. But he bungee jumps off the dam and then like disconnects his rope at the very bottom and just walks off.
Yeah, you know, like, I don't remember which one.
How much physics, complex equations you have to figure out to do that? James Bond,
cool.
Pierce Brosnan.
But I remember that moment. I went like, fuck off. But I suppose that once you get used to that, you kind of expect that silliness. And obviously, the Pierce Brosnan ones got more silly as they went on. And as a counterpart, you can see the opening scene of Casino Royale, which is an excellent chase. And it's another great example of a more sober and serious one, but great one at that. Still exaggerated with them jumping off of cranes and doing their parkour stuff. But it's a great example also.
For sure.
But a film is not just the opening scene, a film is the sum of its parts. So as good as an opening scene might be, you got to stick the landing. Do you know of any films that for you started with a bang only to drop the ball or fizzle out in the end?
There's only one, and there's only one right answer for this, and it's Ghost Ship. The greatest opening horror scene ever. The most disgusting multi-kill sequence I've ever seen. And then it just is like, you know, there's nothing, you know, for the rest of the movie.
I've seen a lot of people mention that. I haven't seen that film in like 20, 30 years. Sure. But I've seen a lot of people bring it up, and I've been meaning, okay, I have to go and rewatch this scene. Is it when we're, spoiler for everybody that hasn't seen Ghost Ship, but where everybody is sliced through the middle or something like
yeah,
that?
Yeah, they have a guy wire, like a metal guy wire that's holding up like one of the smokestacks or something.
Oh, yeah.
And it breaks and it just shears the entire, they're having like a dance party.
Yeah, yeah.
The band, all the waiters, all the kids, the only people that don't get cut in half are the small children because they're too short.
Yeah, I just remember, yeah.
And it goes in a very blasé, you know, it's a horror story.
Yeah.
I actually do have two movies, one that's on my list and one that is a runner-up on my list, that although the movies are not bad after the intro is by far the best part of it. And to me, it's a sharp drop-off from the intro to the rest of it. Still great movies, but the intros, it's almost impossible to beat the introductions. So I'll say what they are when I get there.
Okay, no, we'll definitely get there. But let's say before heading into the opening loot, let's open the door to a new game that I'm calling the opening quote game. Ooh. And in it, I'm going to act a quote from an opening scene of a film and let you guess what film it is from. What do you say?
Yes, I love games. Let's do it.
Okay, so I have five. Okay, so some of them are not lengthy, but so I'm going to keep it short with five.
Okay.
Did you bring a horse for me? Looks like we're shy one horse. You brought two too many. It's a classic. You said you didn't lean into classics.
Yeah, I was going to say, sounds familiar, and I'm going to assume this is a Clint Eastwood movie. He's not Clint Eastwood, it's gonna be John Wayne. I'm just gonna go with let's go with Good, Bad, and the Ugly.
Yeah. Once upon a time in the West. Charles
Manson. Yeah. No.
Great.
Westerns, I've only seen like four classic Westerns ever.
Oh.
And so far I've loved almost every one of them.
Oh, you have a lot to look forward to.
High Plains Drifter, most recent one. Yeah, solid. That was great.
That's one I've been meaning to watch. That's a Clint Eastwood one. I haven't seen it.
Weird plot. I love it. Just go into it blind, it's great.
Yeah. Let's go into another one. And maybe this one is a bit more recent.
Okay.
I'm going to blank a name. So.
Okay.
That's a lot of money. If this blank guy was so smart, he'd have had us bring a bigger car. I'm betting the blank told you to kill me as soon as we loaded the cash. No. I killed the bus driver. Bus driver? What bus driver?
Yes, indeed. That is The Dark Knight.
Oh, definitely. Iconic. I'm not as huge a fan of The Dark Knight as most people, but definitely it's a great opening scene, and Heath Ledger is just fantastic.
Sure.
Okay, let's go with another one. Okay. Some things that should not have been forgotten were lost. History became legend. Legend became myth. And for 2,500 years, the ring passed out of all knowledge. I should have blanked that.
I would have got it anyways. As Lord of the Rings, Fellowship of the Rings.
Yeah, another great one. I did an episode on that prologue because it's just so great. It's such a great prologue, a way to start the film.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. I love it. So good.
Okay, let's go with the fourth one. Lieutenant, you were given specific orders. Hey, I'm just doing my job. You give me that jurisdiction crap, you can cram it up your ass. The orders were for your protection. I think we can handle one little girl.
Oh, this is The Matrix.
Yes.
Oh,
you got it. Like,
your cadence was good, too. It's for your own protection.
I'm a huge fan of Agent Smith. I'm not a fan of the film. Sorry for everybody, but I'm a huge fan of Will Wheaton and Agent Smith.
Wow. Man, you were just like taking down all my darlings today. Don't like The Dark Knight. Don't like The Matrix.
I'm sorry.
Like Paul Blart Mall Cop.
No. But let's no.
The legendary.
No, that's iconic.
You got dropped somewhere.
I'm not as much of a fan as most people, but
okay,
but I still like them. Okay, let's go with the last one.
Okay.
See, I got the idea. Last liquor store was stuck up. All customers kept coming. Yeah. And you got the idea of taking their wallets. Now, that was a good idea. Thank you. Made more from the wallets than we did from the register. Yes, we did. A lot of people come into restaurants. A lot of wallets. Pretty smart, huh? Pretty smart.
That was a great read, Honey Bunny. This is Pulp Fiction.
Thank you, Pumpkin.
I got one for you.
Okay, go ahead.
3 billion human lives ended on August 29th, 1997. The survivors of a nuclear fire called the war blank day.
The Judgment Day.
Yeah, that's right.
No, that's it.
Yeah, the crushing of the skull.
Yeah.
I love
Iconic.
It.
No, yeah. Definitely. That's a fun
game.
Oh, yeah. You just missed the first one, the classic one.
Oh, yes. What was it? Once a Time in the West?
Once Upon a Time in the West.
Would you say that's probably one of your top Westerns?
Yes.
Okay.
Number two.
Number two. Nice.
If you listen to my Western Loot episode, you're going to see it's my number two.
Oh, all right. Great.
Number one, Unforgiven, Clint Eastwood.
Is that the one? Is that one where he's older? It's Martin Freeman's in it, and there's retribution and stuff.
Yeah,
I watched it, and it did not land on me. Probably because I don't have the history of seeing his career through.
You know, Unforgiven was actually one of the first ones. Okay, let me rephrase. My mom is a huge Clint Eastwood fan.
Okay.
She's very big on it. So even though I was a kid and she was watching Clint Eastwood films, I wasn't really that much into it or watching them. But it was something that was like always on my periphery. But I think that Unforgiven was my first official Clint Eastwood Western that I saw. Mm-hmm. And maybe it didn't, I liked it, but maybe it didn't land as well as it has done on rewatches after I've seen all his earlier films. Because the film, as you theorize, the film serves as a sort of closing to his career.
I was like a lot of Clint Eastwood falling off a horse, you know? Can he kill someone already? Come on.
But I would, after you watch a couple of his more classic ones, maybe give it another spin.
I put that on the end of my great American Western list to rewatch again at the end and see how it's changed. Cause I did rate that on Letterboxd pretty low. And, I'm going through all the perennial, you know,
talking about killing all your darlings. See?
Yeah, I know.
One of mine, yeah.
That's one for me, baby.
we're almost even. So, it's time for our opening loot. The moment where we take turns in sharing our top five opening scenes from any film. Or just five opening scenes you want to put the spotlight on, however way you want to go. So let's open the gates and we'll start with your number five and take turns until we reach our number one. I'm still not settled on my list. I have a list, but I still don't know which ones I'm going to pick for my top five. But let's go. Let's start with your number five.
Okay, my number five is it's the entry to a trilogy, which is not really a trilogy, but I only recognize the trilogy. And it is a fantastic introduction to a character that is now iconic, shot by one of the masters, Steven Spielberg. This is Raiders of the Lost Ark, the introduction to Indiana Jones before it was called Indiana Jones and Raiders of the Lost Ark. It was just Raiders. And it's got action. It's got adventure. It has a villain reveal and then subsequent exit from the movie, The Great Alfred Molina. It has booby traps and it's got literally everything. And you learn everything you need to know about Indy from the get-go, and introducing a new character to a universe, even though they didn't necessarily know they were going to make sequels to it, introducing this iconic character, this adventure movie, it had to be impactful. And it's impossible to watch it and go, okay, that guy's lame. You love Indiana Jones the second you watch the intro. So it's one of the greats.
I definitely agree. It's definitely, like you said, one of the best introductions of a character out there, because like you said, you pretty much know everything you need to know about him in that opening. It's a really, really cool one. You see how he don't speak at first. He's just silent and he's like taking the darts from the tree and like, okay.
Yeah.
And you see the back and the fedora and the jacket. The booby traps are so cool. So it's definitely a more than iconic opening.
And you see him whip a guy's gun out of his hand too. Who has a whip? That's cool.
And then you cut and see him teaching a class, which is a really cool juxtaposition.
That's nice.
I love it. So I'm going to go with one that I thought it would be a bit obscure, but you actually mentioned it earlier when we were talking about the topic. And it's a great opening, but maybe it's a more nostalgic one for me, because I was introduced to it by my brother, one of my older brothers, who told me you should see this because he saw I was like getting into films. And it's Glengarry Glen Ross, 1992.
so good.
Yeah,
so
it's good. Such a great opening. And like we were talking when we were developing the topic, it sets the mood perfectly for the urgency that these salesmen have for what is happening. For those that don't know, since this is a more obscure choice, Glengarry Glen Ross follows four real estate salesmen that have like a limited time to reach a certain goal of sales, and they're desperate. They're cutthroat desperate. It's a film that really doesn't get mentioned as much, but it has a great cast. It has Al Pacino, Ed Harris, Alan Arkin, Jack Lemmon, Kevin Spacey, Alec Baldwin.
De Niro. No, not De Niro. Pacino, right?
Yeah, Al Pacino.
Pacino's
yeah.
not in that scene, though, right? He comes in later.
He is, because the four salesmen are Pacino, Ed Harris, Alan Arkin, and Jack Lemmon. Okay. One of them comes late. But yeah. they're all there.
Okay, so he comes in late. Yeah, got that.
Yeah. And it's an iconic opening where this character, Alec Baldwin, which is like a supervisor or boss, lays it all out for them. And this is what you got to do. First prize is a Cadillac Eldorado. You know what the second prize is? A set of steak knives.
Steak knives.
Third prize, you're fired.
Yeah. The good news is you're fired.
Alec Baldwin is... 90s Alec Baldwin is such a ham fest to enjoy, because I don't want to deviate too much, but if you've seen Malice from 1996, something with Bill Pullman, Nicole Kidman, that's another great Alec Baldwin ham fest. But in this case, he rules this scene because, like I said, he transmits this urgency that these four salesmen have for what they need to achieve. If you don't reach your goal, you're going to be fired. A, B, C, always be closing. It's a great scene.
A, always B, B, C, closing. Always be closing. Always be closing. I've worked in sales. I've worked in door-to-door sales before I went into auto body as just like a lark on a summer to try to see what that was like. And I met a guy just like him.
Oh.
He came into our office, and he was exactly Al Baldwin's position. He was a really good salesman somewhere else in the company that the big bosses came down to show us how to sell. And he walked with me door to door to sell alarms, which is what I was selling. And he was insufferable. And he was a very good salesman.
Well, 50-50. You win some, you lose some.
Exactly. It was crazy. So love that. Great pick.
Okay, so let's go with your number four.
Number four is one that you mentioned earlier as well, and it is another villain introduction in this case, and it's got a throwback to the original series that the new movie was based off of. It is absolutely iconic. It's one of the most iconic villains of all time at this point, the late, great Heath Ledger from The Dark Knight. It is an entire heist sequence. It shows him in the first shot from behind, much like Indiana Jones is obscured for most of the introduction. And you see the mask, which is the same mask that I can't remember the main actor's name that used to play the Junker back in the Adam West days.
Cesar Romero.
That's it. It's got the same mask that he had back then. And it goes into this well-articulated heist that is brutal. It's dog eat dog. They're turning on each other. William Fichtner, I think, is the bank manager, and he meets his comically untimely demise. And then you see the bus it was all said and done. The bus pulls out into the traffic and he gets away. And you're like, this is not like a Batman movie I've seen before. You know, I'm really intrigued. And wow, that Joker seems sadistic. So I've seen this scene so many times, and I've seen this movie so many times, but it really is so iconic.
Yeah, definitely. That performance by Heath Ledger is easily one of my favorite villains, one of my favorite performance, period. Mm-hmm. It's so good. I remember at the time, I don't know how old you were when that came in, but the amount of skepticism.
Oh yeah,
people, I remember when Heath Ledger was announced as, you know, he's gonna be the Joker, and people were furious. People were angry. This guy, this is no Joker. This is just
heartthrob.
Heartthrob. And he killed it. I mean, he nailed that performance. It's iconic. And that opening, I love the opening, because even though you see him in at the beginning, the first shot, you're really not sure where he is. It's very ambiguous as they're going back and forth, and you see they're all wearing like the same kind of mask. They're not the same mask, but they're like similar. And his hair is not green, not dyed. So it's really ambiguous, and I like that back and forth as they start to topple themselves down like dominoes, like boom, 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 boom. It's a really fun scene.
Yeah, he's the same backlash that Heath Ledger was getting before anyone had ever seen him was the same thing when Bryan Cranston was going to play Walter White in Breaking Bad. It's like he's playing a meth cook, a teacher who's a meth cook, the guy from Malcolm in the Middle, the dad. Okay, whatever, you know, and then blew him away. So, you know.
Yeah, yeah, that's another iconic performance, definitely. Mm-hmm. So for my number four, I'm going to go with one that I already mentioned, but I want to give it more props. And it's one that I, like I said, I dedicated an episode to it, and it's the prologue of The Lord of the Rings, The Fellowship of the Ring. And I think it's such a great opening to this franchise, especially for people like me who are no Tolkien readers, hadn't read the novels. I've read how Peter Jackson and this team of writers, Philippa Boyens and Fran Walsh, brainstorm how to tackle this, the depth and the scope of what they wanted to transmit in this opening. And I think they did a perfect job with it. I think this opening sets the mood, establishes what's going on, presents some key characters, and shows us what's going to be the threat, what's the goal here. And I think it's a perfect opening. And in the voice of none other than the great Kate Blanchett, who's just mystical and mesmerizing in her narration, is just a great opening. And again, I did a whole episode on it, so you can just look for that.
Was it your intro was one of those where you just take a one scene and dissect it, essentially?
Yes. Yes.
I like those ones when you do that. Yeah. I got to go back and watch that one.
Yeah, special episodes every other month. I take one scene and break it apart and talk about it at length. So everybody can go look at my back catalog. So that's my number four. What about your number three?
My number three is the one that I mentioned earlier, is a great movie with an even greater intro that the rest of the movie cannot live up to. Everybody who cites this intro says it completely destroyed them emotionally. You're left a sopping wet mess of tears. This is, of course, Pixar's Up. The quintessential emotional breakdown. You see the life and death of a lifelong romantic couple, their plans for the future and what happens that makes them not able to fulfill those plans, and then ultimately his resignation to his new life without his love. And it's expertly crafted. Pixar is, they are master storytellers. They just happen to be focused on animation. In any other medium, it would be just as effective, but it puts itself like almost an unreachable goal to try to best Pixar when they do stuff like this. And I do love Up as a whole, but the intro is by far and away the best part of the movie, and it's hard to keep up with that.
I agree. It's definitely heartbreaking. And my past guest, Chris Boyer, was with me on December, and the December episode is going to love it because he brought it up when we were talking about best films from the millennium, from the 2000 on. And he put it at number two, his number two films. And he said he had written a whole essay about Up and how much he loves it and how much he said, you know, a lot of people talk about the opening scene, but the whole film presents this and that. So I'm sure he's going to appreciate you bringing it up.
Yeah. And the other one that is also on my honorable mentions list, it's another fantastic movie with an even better opening, is WALL-E, also from Pixar.
Yeah. 40-minute opening, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, half a movie. It's like
yeah, no, but I get it. That's a great choice, definitely. For my number three, right?
Yeah, number three.
Okay. I'm going to go...
You can see you're arranging on the fly in your head right now.
No, yeah. When we were talking earlier, I came up with one that said, you know, I should mention this, and this is a more obscure, but more from left field, and I'm going to bring it up because it really left an impression. And it's Universal Soldier Day of Reckoning from 2012. I don't know if you've seen it, but this is like the final film in this weird franchise, and is a franchise made famous for Jean-Claude Van Damme. Yeah, it started in the 90s with Dolph Lundgren, the first film. Then they made like a couple of cheap sequels, and then they brought Van Damme and retconned the cheap sequels, and and it sort of became nothing. And then I forgot when it came, but there was a sequel that is called Regeneration, 2009, Regeneration, which was like a new spark in the franchise. And as an action film, that one, Universal Soldier Regeneration, was, I'm not going to say great, but it was pretty good.
Sure.
It was a very, very good sci-fi action film. And then came this one in 2012. And at the opening, I'm not going to try to spoil it, but the opening, you got the main character, played by Scott Adkins, Marshall. Okay. Yeah, it's an icon in martial arts films and action films. And he awakens in the middle of the night, and the whole opening is from his point of view. So you really don't see him, his point of view. And then you see him being the victim of a home invasion in his home with his wife and his girl. And it's everything that happens. The one that's invading, it's Jean-Claude Van Damme, who you think is the good guy from the previous films. So it's jarring in that, why is this guy doing this? And what happens is very shocking. It's very impactful. And it really, really left a mark. I like the film. The film is pretty good. As an action film, it's pretty good. I don't know if the film as a whole is as good as the opening, but it's still a good film. But the opening, it really, really left a mark. So that's what I'm going to settle for this spot. Universal Soldier, Day of Reckoning.
Nice. I don't know anything about that series, but I looked it up while you're talking, and it looks like Roland Emmerich directed the first one. And then after that, they changed all the writing staff, all the directing staff, and it kind of went to crap. And then Regeneration and Day of Reckoning brought back a new staff, but both of those two movies had almost the same director, same writers.
Yes. John Hyams, the son of Peter Hyams, who is more or less, not going to say iconic, but it's a known director from the 80s, sci-fi 80s.
Nice. Cool. All right. My number two.
Yes.
This is the movie that started our entire conversation about this. And I almost put it at number one because it is a little bit of a dark horse. My number one is probably a lot of people's number one. But this is, it's the second in a franchise, and I might argue that the second movie is better than the first, mainly because of this intro. The intro sets up a character for his entire tragic life moving forward. This is 28 weeks later. It is a zombie apocalypse, and the first opening scene is probably less than 5 minutes, maybe 5-6 minutes. And it's a bunch of people, strangers and a couple small families kind of crammed together in a house, all boarded up, no light, no sound, no nothing, just kind of like living their quiet life. And you know, since it's 28 weeks later, that they're in the middle of this zombie apocalypse, 28 weeks later after the outbreak. And a small child needs to come into the house, and somebody lets them in, which clues in all the rage zombies that someone's in the house, and they get overrun. And what the husband of this small family that's in there has to make a decision about is, he's essentially able to get himself out, and he's not able to get his entire family out. I'll leave it at that. And the expertly directed small shots of the faces of the family as this chaos is happening. You feel the dread, and you feel the just how frenetic the energy is and how there is no time in it. Danny Boyle is so damn good. And I feel like I would be remiss if I were to say not mention that Danny Boyle is probably one of the greatest working directors right now that never gets brought up in that conversation, because his catalog is bangers from start to finish. But when you are done with the scene and the character is off on his way, all his decisions throughout the rest of the movie, including being reunited with his children and having to explain his decisions and then being reunited with the rest of his family, is the intro colors everything past that for him. And it sparks a conversation in the real world as the viewer where you're like, would I do that? And then you look at your significant other and you're like, would you want me to do that? Or would you want me to do the other thing? And I've had long conversations with multiple people about it, and we get some pretty heated answers on it. So that whole uncertain, it's not obvious, it's not pretty intro is perfect for a zombie movie and the realities of what that world would be like. So I absolutely love this intro so much. It's so damn good.
Yeah, I definitely agree. That's another one I did a whole episode on, and I think that's more or less when our conversation came up. It's such a great opening. One of the things I found out as I was researching for that episode was that the sequel is directed by this guy. It's called Juan Carlos Fresnadillo. He's a Latin guy.
Oh, it's not Danny Boyle?
No. That's the thing.
What, this whole time?
But that's the thing. I couldn't find anything concrete. But Danny Boyle is credited as the first unit director for that film. And it's rumored that he's the one that directed the opening. Or at least parts of it. And that's something that I found out when I was researching. It's such a tense, it's intensity at max level. And like I said, the kind of questions that come up afterwards. And I think I asked that question when I did the episode. I tweeted like that question, what would you do? Or what do you think of his decision? Because I think that the film, maybe you could listen to that episode, but I just want to leave it out there. I think the film kind of takes the easy way out of putting the blame on the guy. Mm-hmm. Robert Carlyle, I forgot his name in the on the film, but it's Robert Carlyle, great Scottish actor.
Yeah.
But I think they play him for an asshole most of the film. It started to make it easier for us to say, he's an asshole. He did this and he did that. But I think it's a more complicated situation. And what occurs, like you mentioned, the heat of the moment, the survival instinct kicks in. And I really, whenever I see the scene, I don't think there was another choice for him. If he would have done any other thing, he would have died.
Yeah, I agree with that. And also, you have a chance to raise your children. You know, one parent's better than no parents. Yeah. And it's like, that's a Sophie's choice right there. But,
yeah,
you know, that's the world that he's in, so unfortunately.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, so for my number two, I'm going to go with a basic one. And it's one that we also mentioned a while ago. And I'm going to go with Scream. 1996, iconic opening of this iconic franchise, which I'm not going to say it started, but sort of like gave like a spark to this trend that we were talking earlier, to start horror films with this like bang moment. And this was so iconic. I saw this film 3 times in theaters, I remember. And the way they staged it, the whole marketing was based around Drew Barrymore. Drew Barrymore is in this film. And Drew Barrymore was more or less in a rebirth after all of her issues, what usually happens to child actors, but she was more or less in a rebirth, and she was in all the marketing. She was in the cover art, and you could see in the trailer, and it was, you know, this is Drew Barrymore. Mm-hmm. And when you see what happens, spoilers for Scream, but I think that most people know what happens, but the whole way they staged this conversation with this guy, Ghostface, as an 80s horror fan as I am, the whole conversation about Nightmare on Elm Street and Friday the 13th, and when I'm a huge Friday the 13th fan, you know, because we're set to be on a Friday the 13th podcast soon. but I'm a huge Friday the 13th fan. And even as a huge Friday the 13th fan at that moment, that question when Ghostface asks, who's the killer in Friday the 13th?
Yeah, of course.
It's Jason, dude. And they said, no, it's his mother.
Yeah.
It got me, and I was like, motherfucker.
You son of a bitch. You did it again.
It's so iconic. And then you say the whole question of, my boyfriend is this and that. And they said, I got your boyfriend here. And then you don't believe it. You think he's joking. And then you see the boyfriend is tied in the backyard. It's so iconic. It's definitely, again, it sets the mood of what to expect of this film. And you can see that all bets are off. You can see that nobody's safe. This is the person that we thought would be the lead girl, and it's not. So who's going to die? Who's going to live? Nothing is written. So it's definitely a great opening, a great entry here.
Yeah, I like also the fact that the movie is speaking to the audience, and the audience are by nature slasher fans. You know, you're going into that movie, you're going to be already kind of predisposed to want that and have a little bit of history with it. So talking like that, you're like, oh, that's interesting. And then it goes into more when you have Jamie Kennedy's character giving the rules of, it's like the whole movie is just great. But just a quick recommendation, I don't want to go too far off the rails, but Sick Out Here, it's on Peacock right now. It's also
the new one, right?
That's the new one. Yeah, great. Super fun watch. And it's the same writer from The Scream.
Kevin Williamson.
Yeah, exactly. I can't remember. I never can remember if it's Williams or Williamson, so I just don't say his name.
Williamson.
Yeah, really, really fun slasher, though.
Okay. I didn't even know what it was about. I just saw the name mentioned.
It's a COVID coming up in person. If you got COVID fatigue in media, don't watch it. Other than that, it's a great time.
Okay, yeah. Good one. So let's go into number one.
Number one. Here it is. One of the greatest villains of all time to me, not necessarily because the villain is better or worse or more well acted or less well acted or whatever, but this person, it could have existed in the real world. And the scene is set on a French dairy farm in the throes of World War II. And it has some of the most charismatic banter back and forth between a man of culture and a man without culture. And the man of culture, who in a normal movie would be your protagonist, is the most despicable person you can imagine, the Jew Hunter from Inglourious Basterds. It is so tense. And the first time that I watched it, I was holding my breath as the camera pans down or, you know, slides down and below the floorboards, expert shot, fantastic shot, and shows the Dreyfus family under the floorboards being, because you don't know the whole time as the viewer that the Monsieur de la Petite is actually harboring enemies of the state under his floorboards.
Yeah.
The Jew Hunter knows. but you don't know. And rewatching the scene, another great sign of a great movie or a great scene is when you rewatch it again and you have a new context to it, having seen the beginning, middle, and end of that scene or movie, it really hits even in a completely different way on second and third viewing. So what is I'm drawing a blank, the actor's name.
Christoph Waltz.
Yes, Christoph Waltz is so good. And Monsieur Lapidite is so good. And it's very strange. Like, Tarantino makes these weird choices with his movies that I'll never quite understand, where they'll subtitle the word we with we. Like, they'll say we and it says O-U-I on the bottom instead of saying yes. Like, the subtitle's in the same language as being spoken. Like, there's little funny things that along that way. And they're actually, for such a tense and terrifying scene, there is humor somehow injected in it by Tarantino when he pulls the giant pipe out. Yeah. And you're like, what is this? So it's, I don't know, it checks every box for me. And the finale and the music build up, and then Shoshana running away, and you think he's going to shoot her from a distance, and he just pulls away, and you're like, Shoshana. And it's like, that's your character, that's her backstory, oh my god, what is she gonna do? And then the payoff to that is even more extravagant, although Hans Lander is not in the theater when she gets her revenge. He gets his own special revenge, which is wonderful too.
Yeah, probably his masterpiece.
Yes.
No, definitely. I have it on my list, but I'm going to give my first spot to another one just to make more balance. Yeah, mix it up. But I had it on my list. I had a mixed bag of choices, and it's definitely an iconic scene. And it's Tarantino has this talent of creating these tense conversation scenes. Mm-hmm. It might sound like I'm pimping a greatest hits of my show, but I did an episode, one of those special episodes on Pulp Fiction, on the Brett and Jules scene. Mm. The one where Jules, you know, do you speak English?
Yeah.
Which is a great scene. But it's this tense scene where you have this conversation, like I said, with humor and a quote unquote cordial conversation between two guys that, you know, one's going to kill the other or one's going to do something to the other. And you got this here. You get this exchange between Hans Landa and this dairy farmer. You get it in what's this other?
There's no Country for Old Men. There's one with at the gas station scene.
Yeah. Yeah.
Little less cordial, but still. On the surface, there's one conversation, but bubbling just below it, you know, there's more nefarious intentions behind the words.
Yeah.
And you don't know what's going to happen, but you know it ain't good.
But I was thinking more of Tarantino and Kill Bill. In Kill Bill, you get a couple of exchanges. For example, the opening scene from Kill Bill with the bride and Bernita, or you get the final scene with the bride and Bill, that conversation they have at his house, which is another example of a very tense conversation that you know it's not going to end well. And this is the case here. And you mentioned a couple of things that I think are great, because you don't know where we are in the blind the whole time if he's really harboring Jews. We don't know. Mm-hmm. And he's so confident, not confident, but
calm.
He's calm, yeah. And they both know, but we don't know. That's the thing. And the way that Tarantino moves the camera, it's great. And he does like a switch in the like a 180 in the camera, which is masterful. And sort of puts you on the other side. I think it's a great scene, definitely. And Hans Landa, same year as Heath Ledger, another great villain performance. That year was great. I mean, you get Heath Ledger as a Joker, you get Christoph Waltz as Hans Landa, you get Javier Bardem as Anton Chigurh. I mean, those are probably three of the most iconic villains.
That's amazing they all came out in the same year. I mean, I have this, hold on, let me see if I can get this here. It won't translate to the podcast, but on my wall I have.
Oh, yeah. He's showing that two framed pictures of Inglourious Basterds and Pulp Fiction.
There's a Django down there on the end, but you won't see it. Okay. Those are probably my top three Tarantinos.
I'm going to have to like a Tarantino loot at some point. So that one's going to be fun.
Yeah.
What's
your number one? I'm curious.
Yeah. Again, this is not necessarily ranked. I'm just throwing out scenes that I think are great. And I'm going to go with one that we mentioned already. Just to make a point, I had Raiders of the Lost Ark on my short list. I had 28 Weeks Later on my short list. So we pretty much, like I said, there was going to be overlap.
Yeah.
But I had a couple of backup ones just to mix it up.
That's why you're the best.
I try.
Put it in that back pocket. New number one.
That's how we do it in Loot. but the one that I'm going to mention, number one, is Once Upon a Time in the West. This is a great opening to a Western. And like I said, you haven't seen it, but this is a Western directed by Sergio Leone. Starting Charles Bronson is the main character. He's an outlaw, a good outlaw. It's called Harmonica. That's how they call him because he goes with a harmonica and he plays the harmonica. But this scene starts with three thugs arriving at a train station and there's no dialogue for like 10 minutes. It's just them arriving at a train station and scouting the place. And you see the proverbial tumbleweeds rolling around and just a few people around. And there's this tension. What are they doing? What are they looking for? And there's a moment where a train arrives and it's just like, boom, after a very lengthy introduction scene and this train arrives and they like, oh, here's where whoever they're looking for is going to come. And just a couple of old people are getting off the train and they like, okay, he isn't here. And they prepare to leave. But just as the train is going away, you hear the harmonica. And Sergio Leone does a great shot because you see them stop in the tracks. And there's a shot of them turning around as the train goes away. And then you see the guy at the other side, Charles Bronson, who is the one they're looking for. And there's this tense conversation between them. It's the way it sets the mood of what's to come and the way it creates, again, tension of what's to happen. No dialogue, no conversation. The conversation starts there, which is the conversation that I acted out in the game. It's so perfect. Pretty much tells you all you need to know about this guy, Harmonica. It tells you all you need to know about the bad guy that sent these goons here. It sets the stage of how ruthless this old West is. It's gorgeously shot. I was trying to describe the way they shot because one of the beauties of the scene is how great it is shot by Sergio Leone. And it's just a masterful scene. It's one of my favorite Westerns and it's a great scene and definitely worthy of a number one if I ever were to rank them.
Nice. I promise you this to you, the King Looter, and your looties, your Lootites. I will watch Once Upon a Time in the West and I will report back because I've heard nothing but praise and I'm looking up like visual clips of this and I know I've seen bits of it, but I've never seen that whole scene all the way through. And I didn't know it had like this arresting intro.
Yeah, definitely. Even if you just watch the opening scene. If you just find out, okay, let me just watch the opening scene. It's great on its own.
Cool.
Do you have any other honorable mentions? Any other one that you had lying around and you wanted to mention?
Yes, I do. My runners up were Temple of Doom. Fantastic scene on its own. I don't think it necessarily fits the whole tone of the movie in per se, but it's a fun intro scene. The Matrix itself, great intro scene. Pulp Fiction, great intro scene. The Prestige. Although it's not visually arresting and like shocking or attention grabbing, it explains everything you need to know about the movie with a great.
You don't know it, but it does.
That's probably in my top 10 of all time movies, The Prestige. It's unbelievably written. It's masterful. The Lion King, Hot Fuzz, Baby Driver, La La Land, Watchmen, which is actually an opening credit scene, and Drive.
Oh, yeah. That's another great one. Yeah. I had here, let me see. I had Vertigo, my favorite Alfred Hitchcock. I don't know if you've seen it, but it's a great opening scene. I had Jaws, which is a very, I'm going to say simple, but it's a very simple scene that pretty much sets the mood of what's to come and what's the threat. I had The Godfather. I Believe in America. It's another great way of establishing the themes of the film. And I could speak about this one for a while, but I really like how I Believe in America. It's great what line. This guy is saying when he's going to the mob for justice. Sure. And it says so much about what America is. You know, I believe in America, in an America where the justice system is so broken that I have to go to the mob to look for real justice or what he believes is just real justice. And I think it's a great opening. I had a fun one, Office Space. Have you seen Office Space?
Yeah, actually, I just watched it with my girlfriend for her first viewing like 2 weeks ago, and the intro is great.
For everybody that has worked the 9-to-5, and it's a perfect opening, and my favorite bit is with the Michael Bolton guy. when he's rapping it with the money and then
yeah, the gangster rap and then locking the doors when the guy walks by.
Yeah. With the money and then he goes up again. Hey, we're speaking with my mother.
Yeah, that and changing lanes to the faster lane is
and then very, becomes very, the slower one.
Yes, yeah. Very relatable, yeah. That whole bit.
Definitely. We spoke about Mission Impossible briefly. I mean, we mentioned it when mentioned the franchise that had used the opening scene as sort of a staple. Most people, when I say it, say, what? My favorite Mission Impossible is the third one. And one of the reasons is the opening. Not the sole reason. I think the whole film is great. But the opening, I don't know if you've seen it, but it opens with a flash forward of what's to happen. Like you see Tom Cruise is tied down and you get this villain who is Philip Seymour Hoffman is the bad guy.
Yes. I was just going to say it's Philip Seymour.
And he's threatening Tom Cruise's wife and he's saying,
give
me whatever and I'm going to count to 10 and I'm going to blow her brains out.
Yeah.
8, 9, 10. And you see this tense exchange. And the reason why I like it is one of the many reasons why I like it. It's that it gives so much humanity to the character of Ethan Hunt, who you had seen in Mission Impossible 2, which is probably the worst in the franchise. You had seen him as this sort of detached superhero. And here you see him vulnerable with no choice, no way out.
And someone
that he loves, it's being threatened. Plus, you get Philip Seymour Hoffman, probably one of my favorite, if not my favorite actor of the last 20 years.
Yeah.
He's great as the villain. And it's another one that I wanted to at least bring up. And last one, Star Wars, the first one, the original one. It's another great one because you get the Imperial Starfighter chasing the small ship and you see the size of the Imperial Starfighter against the small size of the Rebel ship. And then you see the soldiers getting ready to face the Stormtroopers and Darth Vader and you see the tension, the dread, the fear in their faces. It's so great. And then you see this great introduction. Speaking of great intros to great villains. Mm-hmm. It's this intro with the door opening and Darth Vader coming out through all the smoke of the guns. It's such a great and iconic entry. I love it.
Yeah, if it wasn't for that intro scene too, we never would have had the end of Rogue One, where he comes out and really lays the waste down.
I'm a huge fan of Rogue One. It's to watch them back to back. It's really fun.
When the red lightsaber comes down and you just see the glow of the fog, my girlfriend watching it together the first time and she's like, "Oh my god, woo, daddy, dark daddy."
I love it. I love it. I'm glad you brought that up again. I'm a huge fan of Rogue One. So yeah. So now, as usual, I went and asked on Twitter for people to share their favorite opening scenes on any film, and this is what I got. If I'm not mistaken, I just got one because I forgot and I just put the question like 2 or 3 hours before I started recording. So I just got one, but it's from probably my top listener, Tom at Death Heaven. He said, "The Lion King, which you mentioned, the circle of light, the vibrant sunrise, the animals, your ears, your eyes, and your imagination all brought to immediate attention." This is a great opening.
I'm friends with Tom on Twitter as well.
Yeah.
I was like, "You have at Death Heaven? I love that band." And he goes, I've heard the band, but it's not because of the band. I'm like, oh, okay. That's kind of sad. Hi, Tom.
Yeah, hi, Tom. And he mentioned Up. Not exactly the first scene, but the 4 minutes or so montage of the life of Carl and Ellie is as good as anything ever put to film. So yeah, that's another one that, like I said, my friend Chris is going to be happy to hear. So as much as we would like to keep talking about openings, we have to close the door on this now. Pete, why don't you tell us what's in store for the Middle Class Film Class podcast this year?
Oh, this year. So this week we're getting ready to release our movie this week is In the Mood for Love, is one of Joseph's picks. By the time you listen to this, I'm not sure how many weeks out you're going to release this in, but what's upcoming, what we have on the wheel right now is Gerald's Game, Boogie Nights, Kubo and the Two Strings, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, Before Sunset, Dragon Ball Super Broly, which is a fan pick. Shoplifters and Doctor Sleep. Those are the 8 movies we have up for grabs, and it's just a random pick. What we also did is we're doing one fan pick episode every month where all three of us watch a separate fan pick, a non-Patreon fan pick, just any old listener, and we'll all three of us review our one individual movie for a bonus episode that's available to everybody. But for the Patreon, we're doing things like we The Last of Us TV series on HBO Max right now. I'm a huge fan of the game. Me and Joseph both love the game. Tyler's watched the entire game on YouTube, but never played it. And we're doing a week-by-week reaction to each episode, really short 15-minute episodes that's available just to the Patreon. But we're planning some watch-alongs, some streaming events, maybe some like commentary-length episodes. And for our high-level Patreon subscribers, we have after 3 months of subscription, you're able to call into the show or be on the show in some capacity, whether that's giving your streaming picks for the week or for the month or for whatever, or sitting in for part of a review episode, or doing a trivia, you know, game against another Patreon member, one-on-one interview discussion, whatever it is, unique to whoever the person is and what your comfort level is being on mic. So we got a lot of fun stuff in store, and it's a fun time, and the show skews towards comedy. It's a funny show. So if that sounds like it's up your alley, give us a shot.
I definitely recommend everybody to check out Middle Class Film Class. It's a great show. And like we were talking earlier in the opening, I definitely enjoy it. So I look forward to all of that.
Thanks,
and
buddy.
Where can people find you on the internet, find the podcast?
It's probably easiest just to search it in your podcast player, whatever you're listening to this on. It's the Middle Class Film Class, all four words. And it's a black and white logo, all three of our heads. It's really simple to find. But we do have a website. mcfcpodcast.com. We have a Facebook page, we got a Twitter, we got Instagram, all that stuff. But if you want to follow me on Twitter, I'm The Real Pete with four E's in the middle, P-E-E-E-T-E. And I'm really active on there. And yeah, it's a million ways to get in touch with us, but just look us up on whatever podcast player you have, and the show notes has all that stuff too.
Yeah, definitely vouch also for following Pete. He's a great follow and great guy to interact with.
Thanks,
Do Tyler and Joseph have Twitter?
No. Joseph mans the podcast page, which is Podcast MCFC. Most of it is sending out our weekly news stories that he's got aggregated, because the first episode of the week on Mondays is news and review. So we all just talk about whatever weekly news is going on before giving our streaming recommendations. So he'll send those out. Not a lot of interaction there, but I always tag the show in if we got something going on. So if you follow me, you're going to get the mainline to the show.
Okay. Pete, it's been great to talk with you again. Let's hope this opens up the possibility for more collaborations on the road.
Yeah, buddy. Yeah, let's do something fun. We'll have to get you on. And I don't know what you want to do with us. Like I said, it's your comfort level. And I know our time zone may be a little restrictive, but we would love to do something. It sounds like a fun time.
No, definitely. We're definitely going to settle something. So I really enjoyed talking with you today. And again, hope to have you on the show at some point again.
Yes. Thanks, Carlo. Appreciate it.
Take care.
Yeah, bye.
So that was it for our opening loot. But before we move on, I want to share some additional picks from our listeners on favorite opening scenes. When I put out the tweet asking people for their favorite opening scenes, it was late, I forgot, and I didn't give people the usual day or two to come up. So a few came in late. My friend Keram at K. Maliki Sanchez said best opening scenes: The Player, Usual Suspects, Blade Runner, Cabaret, Cremaster Cycle, The Cook, The Thief, His Wife, and Her Lover. A couple of great choices and a couple that I still haven't seen, but thanks for sharing, Keram. My brother Jorge said it's a documentary, but Jose Padilla's Bus 174 opening is as beautiful as it is ominous for what is to come. I saw that documentary a long time ago, but I barely remember it. Need to check it out again. So thanks, Jorge, for sharing it and reminding me of it. So that was it for opening loot. Once again, I want to give 100 thanks to Pete for opening his door to us. Did you see what I did there? And for the great conversation. And to everybody, hope you can check out some of these great opening scenes. I would say most, if not all of these cases, are great films overall. But even if you don't watch the whole film, check out the opening. And if you do, please get back to us. Let us know. Like I always say, I love to get feedback on the loot. Remember, you can get in touch with us via Twitter at TMML2021 or me personally at TiffCGT. And also remember to check out our Patreon at patreon.com/movieloot so you can be a part of the loot. As for listening to us, remember to look for us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or whenever you listen to podcasts. And if that platform allows you to rate and or review, please do so. That's the best way to spread the loot. So it's been enough openings, so we're closing the door on this episode, but we're really hoping that all of you will open your ears and hearts to us. But now I gotta run.
Shushana!